Free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net. See our past shows, links to the archives, get the call-in numbers if you want to chime in live, and you can see our upcoming shows. One that I have yet to put up there is from a board meeting we had this last weekend. Jean Manning is an author of an excellent book on new energy. We're going to have her on to talk about the new energy movement, the local gathering that they have up in Vancouver, Canada. They get together on a regular basis and they have quite a little social network there. We'll be going into depth about all that. I'm looking forward to that. Well, John Reed, sorry to go on to that little tangent there for you.
No. John. That's very interesting. I like Vancouver. Maybe attend.
Well, you're going to be talking today about your company, Near Futures Energy Corporation, low-mass steam engine for inexpensive energy generation from a wide variety of fuels, ideal for developing world.
Yeah, it's ideal for the developing world. It's ideal for the developed world as well. And if you don't mind, just take a few seconds, even though I know that your audience is already on this page, I'd like to talk a little bit about the paradigm, and I have a particular reason for doing that. The paradigm that currently exists, the grid paradigm, and I use that both in its literal sense and in the metaphorical sense of grid in terms of control, global control of all energy from a centrally or from centrally distributed areas.
Mm-hmm.
As an anathema for a variety of reasons that I don't need to go into here because I'm sure everybody has a pretty good idea of that. And then the switch over to sustainable energy. Our particular, or my particular, focus in this, which is within the general sustainable energy purview, has to do with creating solutions for viable, sustainable communities, which is a slightly narrower focus than sustainable development. Theoretically, you could do sustainable development with things like Barstow, the Solar 2 at Barstow, and wind farms and so forth. But sustainable community is somewhat different, or it's a narrower vision of that, in that we target a market that itself will provide its own self-sustaining sources, not just in terms of power, but in terms of water and terrain and agriculture and the whole panoply of things that go under the general heading of habitat.
Mm-hmm.
So finding the solution to that is what we believe that we have and what we're working on right now. And from there on, I'll just let you go.
Well, so you have as an agenda, so to speak, not just to bring forth a device that answers the energy need in a particular sector, but you are also interested in promoting, advancing, developing an entire social context of sustainable living, and are you actually developing communities, or are
no? That's for the communities to do. We're about developing tools, as well as in the longer run, education and training. My own background comes from education and training, and one of my partners, Gal Pranov, who is former head of policy development for global climate change for the United Nations, also has a very, very, very strong education and training background. So we will provide models as well as tools, but primarily we're interested in providing tools at a very, very granular level. And by granular, I mean as granular as we can get, whether that is at the level of individuals or individuals and families, residences, neighborhoods, villages, but as small as that particular segment of it can get, that's what we want to target.
Well, let's talk now for, let's introduce the audience to your technology. This, just to describe what it is, how it works, just kind of give us a lay of the land of it.
Sure. This is fundamentally, this is based on Robert Greene's steam engine. You can see his stuff on YouTube. If you go to, what's that, the AE Google, and just type in steam, you'll get his a bunch of his stuff as your first hits. It's the primary product that we're looking at developing right now, and for which we have very wonderfully, smoothly running prototypes, consists of a small steam engine that runs on virtually any fuel, or for that matter, on solar concentration, and provides anywhere from a portion of a kilowatt to 5 or 6 kilowatts, depending on how much temperature and pressure you want to put on it and what kind of generator or alternator you want to put on it. It also, in the process of doing that, it produces as its exhaust distilled water, not water that is mixed with oil, as most steam engines do. So it can then, the spent steam, as it were, in spending itself all the way down, can create very large efficiencies if used for more than just electricity. If it's used just for electricity, we're talking about probably about 35% maximum of around 40% efficient, which is still beats any internal combustion engine around. But if we go to micro CHP, combined heating and power, then we can get efficiencies up around 97% by using that spent steam or spending steam to run, for example, scroll expanders and contractors for pumping and air conditioning, refrigeration, and so forth. The thing that really sets this technology apart, and you can't really see this from the views that you get on YouTube, what really sets us apart consists of the fact that it has no crankcase, it has no crankshaft, it has no cams. It relies on a flexible rod transmission that directly aligns the pistons and cylinders so that the pressure is always at 90 degrees to the piston that connects them to a flywheel. And what the difference that this makes is that one can then run saturated steam, which is safe, 400 degrees Fahrenheit, say, at relatively low pressures, up to, say, 5 atmospheres pressure, rather than the 50 atmospheres pressure that some of the really hot rod steam engines of the past ran. And we get efficiencies because without all that extra mechanical stuff in there, it's not lost in running the machinery itself. So I think in a nutshell, that's it.
Okay. I'm looking at a picture at our website, pezwiki.com, of the green steam engine. It is one of our top 100 energy technologies. And what I'm bringing this up for is you mentioned that yours is quite similar to that, and I'd like to bring this up as a frame of reference of, you know, describe this one and then ask, how does yours differ from that?
Well, this is a green steam engine. Robert Green consults for us.
Okay.
And we've licensed the technology from him. We have a non-compete clause in there for our particular target, although he may develop for Boeing as well for a completely different market, the military surveillance aircraft market. They're very interested, and he's developed an engine for them,
uh-huh.
which they've already tested. But in terms of the markets that we target, we're the only ones on the block. And the reason that that is different from what you see online is that we're making a real product out of it. What you get on from Green, if you go online, you can buy plans for this if you want to understand it. And if you are an experienced machinist and you have lots of time, with a good machine shop, especially if you have a good CNC machine shop, you can build these things.
Mm-hmm.
It is very time-consuming, and in principle, the machine works on an extremely simple design basis, it is also very, very precise. You can't vary. You can't be have your main axis at 90.03 degrees. It has to be at 90 degrees. It has to be absolutely straight all the way through. And similarly with the other, it's a precision machine. So it's really out of the range of the average person to even think about producing. A few people out there who listen to your program undoubtedly can, but for the vast bulk of the world, it's a pipe dream that we would like to make true. And so what we produce right now and what we have running very smoothly right now, we've also put into parametric drawings. We've taken those parametric drawings to a Toyota parts manufacturer over in Asia, who is very interested in doing this. He's made a lot of money in his life, and he wants to do interesting projects, and he considers this an interesting project. And to really be able to put it out on a mass basis very cheaply.
Oh.
And cheap is a signal word here.
And when do you think those will become available?
Well, my experience teaches me that things never happen in the time frame that you want them to. I'm saying now conservatively that we should have a beta production run by the third quarter of this coming year. We'll have some alpha prototypes that are produced in this machine shop that we will make available to some of the people who have already prevailed on us because of their extreme needs. For example, the school system of Burkina Faso is desperate for electricity, and they just want one of these right now so that they can demonstrate to their government and to the World Bank that they actually can run this stuff on solar concentration. There's a German-trained local guy there who has built a really, looks like a Rube Goldberg contraption, but it works, solar concentrator. So we'll have prototypes before that. We'll have prototypes probably by the second quarter of this coming year, 3 or 4 months, that we are going to let out to various people who, as I say, who we've already spoken with. But in terms of having an actual production run of something that looks like the final machine, that will be third quarter, I think, at the earliest, and probably to get into real production, full production, we're looking at the end of next year.
Okay. So about a year from now?
About a year from now, yeah.
Uh-huh. I neglected to mention at the beginning of the show that today is the 17th of December, 2007, for the sake of those who are listening to this on archive. I always like to know the date stamp on something that I'm looking at or reading or whatever.
Absolutely.
So let's talk now about the what will this thing do when you do go into production. What kind of applications are you looking for, and what kind of costs are you talking about?
We're looking at practically any application that requires power, and that doesn't mean necessarily electrical power. That can be just straight mechanical power as well. Water pumping, distillation of non-potable water into potable water, including salt water, water for agricultural purposes, heating for both of water and of ambient temperature in homes and other facilities. Think of any, refrigeration is something, particularly in the tropics, that people need. Just sticking a scroll expander on the exhaust steam on this will give you a condenser that will produce refrigeration. So it will do pretty much anything. It'll also provide the juice necessary for communications.
Now, as I look at this prototype, we have actually an animation image on our website at pezwiki.com under Green Steam Engine, and it shows this. You have basically two look like pistons. They're white, and they're going up and down, and they have a little rod coming out of them, and they're making this little metal piece go back and forth, and connected to that metal piece, there's two pistons that one pushes it left, one pushes it right, left, right, left, right. And then at the top of that little that gizmo that's going back and forth is a rod that is then looks like it's pushing a lever back and forth, which is where you're getting your rotation.
The little lever that you see is running a valve that is at the steam intake portion. The actual power thrust is at the head. That is at the things that the pistons themselves are connected to.
Uh huh. So the steam goes into that chamber and makes that lever go back and forth.
It makes the lever go back and forth, but mostly, more importantly, it makes the flex rod transmission turn the flywheel. Or the one that you may be looking at might not have a flywheel. There's a version, but no,
there's a flywheel on this one.
Okay. That flex rod really comes from very old technology. It's the same thing that dentists use in dentist drills and that speedometer cables use and that aerospace controls used for controlling their ailerons. It's also used in heavy mining for running drills past around things rather than having to go through them. And it comes in a variety of types of steel, different hardnesses, stainless as well as carbon steel. And that's what does the adjustment. It does through its entire full cycle, it does a 14-degree adjustment, which removes all the side pressures from the pistons. And so that it's doing the direct reciprocal to rotational movement rather than having a crankshaft do that.
What kind of efficiencies? You mentioned efficiencies earlier, and you may have answered my question. I may not have been paying close enough attention on where you have an input gas that's being combusted. a typical automobile engine, for example, you're lucky to get 30% efficiency by the time you convert the energy from the fuel.
Yeah, 25 for a good Honda, you're looking at 25.
Yeah. What kind of efficiency are you talking about with this design?
Well, if you didn't do anything with the steam, if you just exhausted it out into the atmosphere and you lost all of the spent steam or the spending steam, you wouldn't get more than about 23 or 24% efficiency out of it. Because it's a heat engine rather than internal combustion engine, the Carnot efficiencies apply to it. And you're just looking at the same thing that you would get with an internal combustion engine, except that this engine, because it has such a simple design, costs, once it's into production and once we have scales of economy on them, it will cost very little to produce. But efficiencies won't be much better than an internal combustion engine. But if you make it into a closed system where you recycle that heat that is exhausting out into the atmosphere just by condensing it without doing anything else with it at all and running it into the feed water, then you stop using ambient temperature. Carnot cycle no longer applies, and you start getting efficiencies around 35 to as high as just below 40%. There's where I'm saying that if you then, instead of just condensing it and running it back into your feed water as hot water, if instead of that you then put an additional process in there to get more work out of the steam as it condenses, to both serve as a condenser and as an additional accessory, then you can get very, very high efficiencies out of it. And of course, the Carnot cycle doesn't apply at all.
For example, we've got a whole index of thermoelectric technologies that will convert heat directly into electricity, some of them through solid state, some of them through some mechanical process, but maybe the temperature threshold is lower. The steam engine, the steam propels this system, and then once the steam exhausts, it can then be used as its heat component can be converted into electricity through one of these other systems. And you're saying when you employ one of those, then the amount of heat, the amount of efficiency of the engine goes up, but also the cost goes up because those are not cheap.
Typically, they're not, and you certainly a Stirling engine would run very nicely on the heat differential between ambient and exhaust steam. But producing a really high quality Stirling engine can be prohibitive in cost as well. We're developing right now a cheap, at least in concept right now, scroll expander slash contractor that people can use to do whatever they want to do, whether they want to pump with it or stick another, say they're running an axial flux generator as their primary and they want to create also some DC. They could use the scroll expander on that. If they want to produce air conditioning or refrigeration, they can use a scroll condenser contractor on it. So in the process of doing that, it does two things. One, it does whatever the utility, the accessory design has it doing, and then it also condenses so that we get the water back to 210 degrees Fahrenheit, 100 degrees centigrade, and then run it back into the feed.
Okay. Let's now talk about the price. Let's also talk about size. What's this thing going to look like? Is it going to be similar in shape and power density as an existing engine? Is it going to be a little bigger? It's going to be longer, shorter, fatter?
Yeah, it's going to be a little smaller and just about as bulky As a, say you took a 5 horsepower as a a benchmark, and you look at a 5 horsepower Honda engine that runs a 2.5 kilowatt generator, you're going to be roughly in that same size range, but weight will be far less because it doesn't have all the aforementioned components in it. So it will the unit that we're using right now as a prototype without a cover on it weighs around 20 pounds.
And how much does it put out?
That, depending, of course, on what kind of pressures and temperatures you're, particularly pressures that you're looking at 5 bar, that will put out around 12 horsepower, which will run a 6 kilowatt generator.
Mm-hmm.
It'll actually do a little better than that because steam, unlike internal combustion, steam has maximum torque throughout its entire cycle. So, in fact, any external combustion engine does, or for that matter, even air compressed air does. So it will do a little better than that. It will run at full capacity rather than at peak capacity, what the internal combustion engine would only run at peak capacity.
Uh-huh. Now, let's talk about the price. You're a little smaller, a lot less weight. What about the price?
In terms of the core engine itself, we're targeting, and I can't guarantee this, but we're targeting an end-user price of $500.
For how much output?
For up to 12 horsepower.
Okay.
I don't want to say more than that. It will do more than that, but I don't want to really say more than that because we don't want people to be running the things at 7 bar and 10 bar and 15 bar.
Right. But let's now compare that to what's available in the marketplace today. How much would the same output cost as your 12 horsepower output that's costing $500? How would a comparable system, that's comparable meaning 12 horsepower of an existing technology now?
Well, using Yamaha and Honda, once again, we're looking at around 3 times that price for an engine unit.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're not, for the most part, they don't sell the engine units alone. They sell them as a complete, as a whole. And we will
right.
do some of that as well. And there we're looking to come in at less than $1,000. I have a friend in Baja who just bought a 5 kilowatt, that is a 10 horsepower Honda, that he uses to back up his solar array.
Uh-huh.
And he paid $5,000 for it.
Okay. Now, on the, you were talking earlier about just basically just the core engine, not all of the auxiliary stuff that comes with it. And when you're comparing it to, say, a Honda, they tend to provide a whole system.
That's right. And we will provide a whole system as well. From a business model standpoint, we would rather not provide anything that we don't absolutely have to. So we will provide a basic alternator, probably an axial flux alternator, and we will provide a basic boiler to go along with these. We will also open source those designs so that other people can produce them without franchising or anything from us. We'd rather have other people take care of that for us.
Uh-huh.
But we will do some of it.
I'm going to go on a tangent for a second here. You just used the word open source in a way that I've not heard it used before. In my world, the word open source is something we talk about a lot. And when we say that term, we're referring to the idea of publishing a set of plans for a technology openly on the internet with no intellectual property encumbrances. It's a giveaway of the technology, and people can then build it, manufacture it with no obligation, and they can improve on it, and you have people who are posting the results of their replications and improvements, and it's a team effort patterned after the software industry. Now, we have yet to see a open source project in energy that is features a plausible technology that is actually worthwhile. We've had some 25 projects that are nominally valuable or of questionable output as to whether they're actually producing energy or doing what the originator was hoping that they would do. But that's how we use that term.
Sterling, that is exactly the way that I'm using the term. And I come from a software technology background, and so we will put something together that resembles the GNU license.
For the system elements of the...
For the accessories, not for the core engine, but for the accessories, yes.
Okay. And do you plan on hosting that open source portion on your website so people would come to there and there would be a forum where people could talk about it and post their results and upgrade the instructions and whatnot?
Yes and no. Probably not on nearfutures.com, which is the one that you see right now if you type it in, but on a companion website called nearfutures.org. And that nearfutures.org will also include other things that I mentioned earlier having to do with developing habitat. That is, it will include various agricultural and terrain and water solutions for people, as well as education and training.
So your website is nearfutures.com?
That's correct, with no www.
Okay.
And by the way, we just posted that yesterday. So if you're using Firefox right now, it won't show you some of the videos. They'll show in IE, but not in Firefox. We're working on fixing that.
Uh-huh. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. It's been long.
You know, there's a birthing process involved in that. There you are. This prototype that you have on your home page, you see the steam coming off and you see the it's turning a belt that's turning a generator.
Right.
That's
not ultimately what we're going to do. We just wanted to have
right.
it do that.
Right.
Finally and ultimately, we will have something that is a direct connect. It won't be a belt connect, and it will come right off of the shaft. So the thing will be a little longer rather than wider, and it will have its own brushless generator / alternator of some sort. Or it won't. It might have just a pulley or something like that, depending on what people want to use it for. Some people are not going to be interested in using one of the units. They may have several of them. They may not be interested in using all of them for energy production. They might use, in terms of electricity, they might want to just pump water. And that's, by the way, another aspect of electrical use, independent and granular electrical use, that people have to deal with, and that's storage, so that you can use, for example, a pump to pump water and do gravity feed into a small hydroelectric that will run you when your boiler isn't going. If you're using solar as your primary source of energy, and by solar I don't mean photovoltaic, I mean solar concentration. If you're using that, then of course there are periods of the year and periods of the day when the sun don't shine. And when the
right.
sun don't shine, you want to have your electricity still work.
how would this fit into, let's say, the geothermal industry?
Oh, just plug and play, basically. That's one of the places where it just you stick it on something like it. Of course, you have to have some kind of a regulation so that you don't blow it out. But in fact, we've got some people up in Alaska with the geothermal that are very interested right now.
And this geothermal, from what I understand, we interviewed a professional from that industry some time back who pulled together a paper with MIT on kind of an overview of the geothermal industry. And they're looking at, 10 years before their price point comes down to where they can compete with coal power. What would this technology do to that timeline?
Oh, it would shrink it markedly. We could probably come up with, say, a half megawatt version of this within, I'm going to stick my neck out, 2 years.
Mm-hmm. With all the engineering and whatnot that's involved?
Well, we actually have that one designed.
So
it's, I mean, we have it on paper. We haven't built it, but we already have it designed. So,
so it's already underway.
It's underway on the shelf right now because we don't we have to focus on our main target.
Right. What about the you were just describing the solar industry, using the solar to heat the water to create the steam to run the turbine. Is that what do you propose for the off times of the solar to produce your steam?
Well, you don't necessarily have to produce steam. You can produce steam if you want to. You can run, as I was suggesting earlier, you can run a small little hydroelectric generator by using part of your energy during the when the sun does shine to pump water up for gravity feed. You can also use another thing that we're working on but have just begun to work on, which is rapid flywheel storage, maglev, evacuated chamber maglev flywheels, small. And of course, you can go to the old conventional lead acid batteries and run them through an inverter. But there again, you're looking at, in that particular instance, you're looking at costs that are prohibitive for developing people.
I guess I missed that before. You said that you could run, even though right now in this image, for example, on your website, you're showing steam is running the turbine, you're saying you could run water through that and it would also cause it to cycle like that?
You could run anything through it with sufficient pressure. If you ran water through it, it would work as well. If you ran air through it, it would work also, and in fact, that's what Boeing did with the little one that that Green developed for them. But if you run air through it, you have to lubricate the rings on it, because it uses essentially Teflon O-rings. And if you're running saturated steam, then they are self-lubricating. That is, the steam itself lubricates them. Even if you're running almost dry steam, there's still enough water in it to, at say 400 degrees and 5 bar, you're still looking at self-lubrication. If you go to totally dry steam or air, then you would have to lubricate it. And in that particular case, the exhaust that you get from it would no longer serve as your feed water. So you'd because it would be polluted. So you would have to do something else, and that's not something that we want to get into.
What about using, I know we're wanting to get away from fossil fuels, but I'm just curious, could you use some kind of, say you're combusting some fossil fuels and you've got some outflow of pressure, is there a way that you could implement this as an efficient design for burning fossil fuels?
You wouldn't want to burn fossil fuels with it. If you've got exhaust coming out in the form of, say, carbon monoxide, you could, if it's under sufficient pressure, yes, you could use that. Once again, you would have to have a lubrication device because you wouldn't have the water lubrication.
Could maybe the water temperature in a vehicle doesn't get hot enough, but I'm just brainstorming here a little bit. Is it conceivable that you could use, not an automobile because it doesn't get that hot, but let's say a generator, a city power plant, for example. You could bring the temperatures up a little bit and actually, in your cooling system, generate steam that then turns this. Is that,
There are all kinds of ways to use waste heat. Waste heat from food processing plants where we're working with some people in Philippines right now on a cassava plantation to utilize the waste that they have from that in two different ways. One, right now they just burn the stuff, the dried husk. That burned stuff can be fuel. This will literally run, because it's external combustion, it'll run on anything at all that creates enough heat. So you can burn dried corn husks. You can, in addition to the higher tech stuff like solar concentration, you can also use ferment those organic products and make producer gas out of them, methane gas, and burn that. Which is not quite fossil fuel. It's a little better.
Last week we had on the show the vice president of waste management, the company that comes and collects your garbage, and he was talking about their waste-to-energy plants where they take the methane coming off the landfill. They then use that methane to drive a turbine, which runs a generator, which generates electricity, and they're producing enough electricity on 106 different landfills nationwide to power a million homes.
Neat.
I'm curious. It seems like this turbine design, this green steam engine, could bring down their costs and could help them ramp that up into. They want to double that number by 2020.
Well, it would certainly reduce their costs in terms of capitalization, because turbines are not cheap. Even small turbines are not cheap, and this is cheap. A comparable turbine would cost at least an order of magnitude more than what the green steam costs for relatively the same efficiencies.
Why would it be 10 times more in this application? And earlier you were talking, like the Honda comparison, you were saying maybe 3 times more.
Well, a turbine is more expensive to build than an internal combustion engine. I'm not the person to ask why about that, but I have looked into it a little bit, and turbines are just more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that they necessarily have to be. Somebody could perhaps work on some lower RPM turbine, but the ones that people crank out, say Allison Chambers and people like that, they run at pretty high RPMs. They run at somewhere between 12 and 20,000 RPMs, and I suspect that it has to do with the quality control necessary to do that versus the 2 to 3,000 RPMs that typically a gasoline engine runs at.
Okay, let's say that Paul Paber of Waste Management, that I talked to last week, I got him to give you a call, and he said, hey, what do you got? What would you say in terms of how long it would be before you had something that they could implement in their landfills?
I'd say a year. Because we would have to put something in parallel right now, and we need to really move ourselves through the alpha and beta stages of this prototype before we can begin taking on additional projects, unless of course somebody wants to do that half megawatt one that we already have designed, and we could just stick a separate team on that.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say 1 year, 1 year before you would sit down at the table within the talk?
No, no, 1 year, 1 year before we could produce a machine that they would be able to use. I wasn't clear there.
Okay. Because that, my understanding is that it is primarily the capitalization cost that is preventing them from rolling this thing out faster, because they have to make the thing cost effective. They can't be burning a hole in their pocket. They're a company that has to stay profitable. And there are a number of places, landfills, where the bottom line is producing a revenue for them, enough from the tipping fees and whatnot that they're able to, for example, they have industries next door to the landfill that they can ship the methane over through pipelines, and it makes it worth their while. But if their turbines are costing 10 times less, that could dramatically increase the number of landfills. It could start, a lot of these landfills are actually just flaring off the methane.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. Every time I see that, I think, why don't you put something on that?
I know. But Sterling, once again, my particular focus, and this is not shared by all members of my company who are more concerned with sustainable development than I, as a broad field, I'm concerned with sustainable development within the context of sustainable communities, because I believe finally and ultimately that we won't have sustainable development unless we develop self-reliance so that people can produce this stuff locally and distribute it locally and run stuff locally, because they're resilient. And right now, if we're feeding stuff into pipelines and shipping it long distances, even if it's waste methane gas, we're still feeding essentially metaphorically the grid monster. And I really want my sincere desire is to provide genuinely livable habitat, alternative habitat for people, and that requires a granular, very locally distributed power creation and distribution.
Let's talk for a minute about your company, its size, how long have you been around, what other products might you be involved in? Did you start up just for this project in particular, or is there another line that you've had going and this is a new project for you?
Well, this particular corporation we formed 2 years ago, and specifically for this mission. In terms of sustainable community, I've been involved in that for a couple of decades at least, three decades actually. And in a wide variety of ranges, and there is where we go into other areas, agriculture and water and communications and so forth. And yes, I envision us producing other products as well, either under Near Futures Energy Corporation or as a spinoff. Or under nearfutures.org.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Boeing a few minutes ago was involved in saturated steam, a little prototype. Could you maybe mention any other companies of note that we might recognize?
Not without violating non-disclosure agreements. Boeing wanted it specifically for a military surveillance drone. And they flew one at the Paris Air Show 2 years ago, and they flew one at the London Air Show last year, or this year.
Okay. And those were employing this technology in real time?
Yes. They did not use steam, however. They used compressed air. and they only ran them for a few minutes.
How much of a bite out of the world's energy needs could this take?
Looking at the size of the market that is totally unserved, which is somewhere between right now between 2 and 3 billion people, and which will increase to 5 billion people in over the next 10 years, I'd say that just on that market alone, by supplying that market, that we would be able to take a very, very large bite. I'm not ready to give you exact numbers, but how many people use electricity now? Of those 3 billion people, 2 billion of them have never turned on a light switch. They've never turned on a light bulb. And they'll never make it out of that hole that they're in if they are waiting for their government or for some corporation to supply them with grid power. So my response to that is it's not just them. There are plenty of developed peoples that look for alternatives as well. They don't like the brownouts that they're getting. They don't like the in Portugal, in Lisbon, the cost of grid electricity is over 20 cents a kilowatt hour. In California, it's around 14 cents. There are some places where it's pretty cheap, but they're few and far between. And
9 cents here in Utah.
Nairobi and places like that, they're paying, and these are people who are making a whole lot less money than people in the United States. They're paying 19 to 22 cents a kilowatt hour for juice. So combine those with people who want to build their homes and their communities away from where the grid currently serves them, then you're looking at a very substantial percentage of the world's population. And I believe that once we saturate the market, once we open the thing up fast, and we would have to do it fast in order to stay out of the guns of the people whose cages we would be shaking, then it will spread. I believe it will spread like wildfire, and not just our technology. I believe that once we demonstrate market, that other people, very inventive people who have other stuff, will be able to get funding for it, and be able to pull their technologies off the shelf where it's gathering dust, like Ken Round's ambient energy device.
Yeah, we're looking at that hopefully moving forward with some funding here in the next few days. I was just meeting with him this last weekend.
Yeah, I've had some back and forth with him as well.
Yeah, that's good. Do you generally, as a company, this is probably a really no-brainer question, but are you going to be focusing first on companies and OEM applications where they're using renewable energy as the source of the steam, as opposed to retrofitting the existing power plants or using this technology in new power plants?
We don't really look at creating anything for the grid-sized or mini-grid-sized consumer. We're looking at end-user level product as granular as possible. And by the way, you can gang these things so that if instead of 6 kilowatts, you need 60 kilowatts, you can link 10 of them up and produce the 60 kilowatts that you need.
And the fuel source will be?
I beg your pardon?
The fuel source is going to be?
The fuel source can be whatever you have locally available. If you're in a sunny area like Southern California, where you get a lot of sunny days, or in the tropics where you get a lot of sunny days, solar concentration makes probably the most sense. And we're working with a developer in San Diego on that, on a single-tracking solar concentrator that could be produced very cheaply. If you're in, say, in the Philippines, where we have a project where we're working with some people who are on another project in the cassava fields, then the that would be running either on burning waste material there or on producing producer's gas, methane in the digesters and running on that. If you're
to the end of our time right now.
Okay.
I just have to answer one or bring up a question and tell us if this information is on your website. One thing we've not talked about is the efficiency of your boiler end of this equation. And how do you, let's say somebody in Africa wants to heat the boiler with wood from the forest, and, you know, 90% of the energy is going up in smoke. How do you economize the boiler end of the equation? Do you have that addressed on your website?
We don't have that addressed on our website. We are addressing it, and we have a couple of boiler designs that we're developing right now parametrically, and one of them that we actually have some physical stuff going together on it that will be multi-fueled. And we plan on producing a few of those. Mainly we want to open source the designs on those and let people produce them, either other manufacturers or local people produce them. The boiler stuff is not terribly difficult. I mean, if you can get copper tube and you can get a cheap local burner like you can buy in practically any hardware store, if you've got a hardware store in a developing country, then you can run these.
All right. Well, John, I appreciate you coming on our show. We've been speaking with John Reed of Near Futures Energy Corporation about their license with the green steam engine and how they're going to be bringing forth this ability to make engines much less expensive that can run on multiple fuels, and also working on having the burning of those fuels be done efficiently. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Sterling.
Been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.